So, Bhakti Vinod, page 20, Bhakti Vinod Thakur continues. Those who cultivate knowledge and try to see the Absolute conclude that the Absolute Truth, which is the opposite of material existence, is devoid of form, change, energy, and action, right? So this is very common. It makes sense to the mind like that. Intelligence just discerns things. But the mind then, what is discerned, it has something it prefers and not. So this is something very easy, right? If material is one thing, spiritual, you know, which is opposite, it also then must be opposite. So therefore, material has form, spiritual has no form. Right, just like we were discussing yesterday, is that in culture, then we think, okay, dealing nicely with people, then that's material. So then if I'm a devotee and I'm detached from material life and material culture, therefore I should deal badly. Right? You know, or I would see it in the Indian boys, right? They come from nice families. They all know how to, you know, serve prasad nicely, do everything. But then when they become devotees, when they serve prasad, they do so really badly. And I would ask them, I says, if you were at your house and you're having a wedding, would you serve like this? He says, no, not at all. So he says, why are you serving like this? Because that's material and this is, you know, spiritual. You understand? So it's humorous, but unfortunately it's a social disaster. Right? So this touch of this misunderstanding due to gyan, right? Not the gyan, it's knowledge is fine, right? Because buddhi yoga means it's called after the buddhi. It's not called, you know, after the karma or anything else. The buddhi means in yoga of intelligence. So that's fine, but the intelligence must be connected to Krishna. If it's not, you know, then it's a problem, right? So all it is we're people, it's just that what we're dealing in, that we think what we're dealing in is a value, that's the problem. It's not technically the dealings, right? There may be some problem in the dealings, that can always be improved. But more important is the mentality of what we're doing. Does that make sense? That's the most important. If that's corrected, it's easy to correct the detail. Right, because it's easy to do something nice for somebody you like. So if you're doing it for God, then you can do things nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, form, change, energy, and action. Right? So you have a form. By dealing with it, that form can change. Right? Energy, that's what it needs. So there must be enthusiasm, there must be interest, and there must be action. Right, so in other words, the whole idea of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana gets completely messed up because of this. This impersonal concept, right? So then the tendency is to be very not use energy or action in one's activities, and you don't like any change. Therefore, you see that generally the impersonalists, even though technically they don't care for material life, they're always tend towards being very much stuck on the regulative, you know, principles and the traditional culture and varnashram and all that, when technically they shouldn't be, right? Because if it's all maya, it's all maya. But they pick these things because there's no change, because Brahman doesn't change, right? So it's very stuffy like that. You know, they can appreciate the finities and the culture and all that, because that's for the common people who are more materialistically inclined. So therefore they will have all these things. But the higher thing is that all that disappears. But it still doesn't completely disappear, right? Because they're still conditioned. They still need religion. But they're going to stick to religion in such a way that the form of it's going to be very, very rigid, because Brahman doesn't change. So therefore their lifestyle, that doesn't change. Which is good for coming to the Brahman platform, but its inspiration is not to get to the Brahman platform so you can get out of the material world and go back to Godhead. Right? To them it's taken as this is perfection, is the Brahman realization. Therefore there's a little bit of a problem in their social approach. Does that make sense? Because the mood of it's always what's important. Does that make sense? This they call Brahman. However, they are not have not discerned the real nature of the ultimate truth. Right? So they've understood Brahman, but they haven't understood the real truth. Brahman is part of it, but the real truth is the absolute is a person. Right? However, those who, using their intelligence, search for the final object, perceive the friend of the soul, Paramatma, endowed with a form and similar in nature to the individual soul. Right? So here's the next group. So using their intelligence, the others who cultivate knowledge, so technically it should be intelligence, but here it's not so much they're cultivating knowledge, they're using their intelligence to discern the difference. Right? Because the other one is the speculation is there. In the Ashtanga Yoga, there's no speculation. It's a very set process. So they just use their intelligence, go through. They try to get themselves off the bodily platform. They get in control of it. Right? Control of the body, control of the senses, control of the mind. Right? So they'll have to use their intelligence. So then they see is that here is the friend of the soul, the Paramatma, right? The two birds in the tree. Problem is that once only after coming to that point of realizing the soul, the super soul, then will they take up bhakti, right? So that means so much time and endeavor has been made when they could have started that earlier and made the process much quicker. Because the control of the mind and the senses without devotion is very, very difficult, right? Arjuna said it's more difficult than catching the wind. Right? So he wasn't too enthusiastic about this process. So, therefore, by bhakti, then the process will work much earlier, much quicker. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So you get the difference here because it says those who cultivate knowledge and those who using their intelligence. Right. This is the whole idea of this course is to be able to discern the fine points. Right. To be able to tell the difference between them. Right, to understand it, to be able to explain it, because then that would be useful in one's practice of devotional service, right? And one won't get confused, because you can tell the difference between things. Right? Then, those who see the absolute truth by means of bhakti yoga, whose vision is without obstacles, understand the Lord as he is, as Bhagavan. There's a small Lord, a small he, and a small Bhagavan. Oh no, Bhagavan can stay like that. Full of all energies, all sweetness and all opulences. No, because we're not using it as Sanskrit, so it should be capital B. Is that okay? So now by bhakti, then there's no obstacles, right? The intelligence is not getting in the way, the mind is not getting in the way, so one can directly see the Lord, right? So then here's a quote, Katha Upanishad. 1.2.23. One cannot understand the Supreme Soul by studying the Vedas, or by hearing many scriptures, or by one's mental energy. The Lord reveals himself to the person who accepts the Lord as his master. That person alone attains the Lord. So one who accepts that the Lord is his master, then he will understand the Lord, no one else. Because the Lord being beyond the material and the spiritual, right? Then he is in his own category, so he is not accessible by anyone except through devotion. Does that make sense? He stands on his own. He has expanded his energies. They're dependent upon him. So he is beyond them. You know, God includes his energies, but at the same time, he is beyond that also. Right? The simultaneous one indifference. So this being able being something beyond, that means he is not, you can't by your own intelligence or own endeavor actually know him. You can only know him when he allows you to know him. And that is done through devotion, because that attracts the Lord. Right? Anything else doesn't. If it's use of your intelligence, do you think our intelligence is going to impress his intelligence? Right? Or our endeavors are going to impress his endeavors. You know? So it's not by that, it's by devotion. Right? The child pleases the mother going out in the yard and picking like a dandelion, right? It's generally called a weed, but whatever it is, and gives it to the mother. That's the mother's impressed, right? Because of the intent, the mood, right? Does that make sense? Now, if her husband brought home a dandelion, now you got some problems, right? Does that make sense? Because then why would he bring a dandelion? Right? Unless there was something else connected with it. But otherwise, then he is more sophisticated, so he has to bring home something else. Does that make sense? Yes? So that's the whole point. God is, he understands, means no one's equal to him. Like that. So therefore, it's that endeavor. When you see him as master, that surrender, that's what conquers him. Then you can know the Lord. Does that make sense? Straightforward enough? Yeah. Yes.
Imagine that devotion is can be obtained only after a very disciplined performance of sadhana?
Or bhakti.
It means,
see, it's the association of devotees by which we then gain that devotional service. In other words, the association of devotees, then we pick up the mood that they have, right? Sadhana is a way of practicing that devotion, because if you want a skill, right, then you have to, through intelligence, practice it. Right? If you don't use the intelligence, then you might not be applying it properly, and even you have applied it properly to see the results and see how you can improve it and develop it. Right? If you're not aware of what you're doing and you don't have knowledge of the skills to do something, then how will you get any result? Right? But what's most important in this is that you're making the endeavor to know the Lord. So that's one of the mediums through which you can impress him. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why you have sadhana siddha, archan siddha, kripa siddha. Different ways that one can perfect one's devotional service. So the sadhana siddha means he's so focused and fixed in his sadhana in connection with the Lord that he impresses the Lord that he will do everything, you know, nothing else counts as much as the sadhana. So therefore, then the Lord is impressed. Right? Because he's doing it to please the Lord. Or archan siddha, he does so nicely with the deities and everything like that, that way he attains his perfection. The Lord is pleased through his worship. Or kripa siddha, his surrender, his mood, his prayers to the Lord, like this, that then makes the Lord pleased, and then like that. So of all of them, kripa siddha is the most direct, most easy, like that. But it's recommended, because one may not stay on that platform, that one is using the other systems. So that combination of practice of sadhana, worship of the deity, and offering prayers, then this is then what is, this is the recommended process. Right? Through all of these, one can please the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is you're trying to please the Lord. It's not that the sadhana gives the result. That's karma. Karma, I perform the activity, I get the result. Right? So that we're leaving, karma and jnana we're leaving, or by my intelligence I have understood the Lord. No, it's neither of these. Neither by your action or by your intelligence can you understand the Lord. It's only by devotion. You apply that devotion through karma and jnana. Right? You have some other option. Right? Using your body and senses and mind, or using the intelligence. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Is there anything left? There's one thing left, but what's left? Bhakti is there, but what's left of the mundane facilities you have to work with?
The mind.
No, we already mentioned the mind. Possession. The body, the senses.
Possession.
Huh?
Possession.
No, that's an aspect of the mind. It's gotten in its subtle form, but there's something else that could be brought about, made more clear here. Huh? The words is the intelligence. But the senses are already engaged through the mind. But they can also be engaged with through words to the intelligence.
The ego.
The ego, yes. So that is, I am servant of the Lord. That's that surrender, that's the kripa siddha. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, all the five gross elements, the three subtle elements, because that's what we have to work with, right? And when you say the mind, that includes the senses, sense objects, and the tanmatras, right? You know, the sense of smell, touch, taste, you know, like this. Okay? So those 15 go with the mind, right? Same time, senses are connected to intelligence. That's why you say words, that indicates intelligence, because by words, that means you have to use your intelligence to speak the right thing. But in any case, by body, mind, and words, you've covered everything. Because the body is a gross manifestation of the false ego. So then you have the false ego there and the body. Then the mind means you have the mind and all the senses and sense objects. And then the intelligence, then that means is your words, right? So then, like that. Okay. So then through proper prayers, proper, you know, studying, preaching, discussions, okay, so then everything is engaged. So you don't have something else, right? So there is action and intelligence, right? And your attitude. These are what you have to work with. So then that being used in the Lord's service, that's what then pleases Him. Does that make sense? That's why these are complete. You don't need something else other than sadhana siddha, archana siddha, or kripa siddha. Because everything's engaged. Right? You're going to be engaged in activities anyway. Right? So those activities are connected to the Lord. Your needs and emotions and, you know, perception, oh, that's engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Your intelligence is engaged in the Lord's service. Your identity is engaged in the Lord's service. These are the mediums. There isn't something else. So it's complete. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Someone had their hand up.
Yeah. Could we see the attitude as like connected to the desire, is like what we want? See, like we want to see the Lord in form of Brahma. So then Krishna is the one who gives the knowledge by which we can see Him. That way, or we want to see Him as a Paramatma, and He gives us the intelligence. But if we want to see Him in the original form, then He is the one who can put us with the devotees and who can give us the sarasanga. And so then, through our attitude, we can then perform. But it's the Lord who supplies, actually.
Yes, but in here is more important. That I mean, intelligence is there. He gives the. Didami buddhi yogam tam, He gives that intelligence by which, but, yeah, so you can say it's intelligence, but more important, or let's say that would be how you would apply it. Mm-hmm. But you're only going to apply your intelligence to something that you're committed to. Right? So what is that commitment? What's that based on? That's the essential point. He also mentions this in Gita. That He gives this so that the worshippers of the demigods can be enthusiastic to worship. Mm-hmm. Right? What is that? Faith. Yeah. In other words, you have the faith, so therefore you're committed to action. So then Krishna gives the intelligence for the action. So when He's saying, I give the intelligence, that means already the faith is there and the commitment to action is there. So now you use your intelligence how to best perform the activity, right? Because then intelligence in this case means it can be in both positions of Prajumna and Vasudev, right? Because Prajumna means the intelligence is being used, or knowledge is, you could say more as a knowledge, that aspect. Oh no, that's not knowledge, it's Sankarshan. Intelligence is Prajumna because then it connects with the senses. You're interested to use them. But the actual use of them, that's Vasudeva. Right? So that means the action's going on with intelligence. The other ones, the action's not going on, but the intelligence is being, you can see, oh yes, this is a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. Same time as the mind is involved. Right? So the mind is more of, how you say, would be the driving principle there. But then when it comes to action, then it's the senses, the intelligence is making it work, right? But it's still based on the need of the mind. So it's always means it's just different positions of the same thing. Does that make sense? So therefore, is that faith is there, therefore then one has the identity in that capacity. And you are committed to obtain that as a result. Then you get the intelligence to perform the action. Does that make sense? So you need the faith, you need the intelligence. So Krishna is giving them both. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes?
Maharaj, Krishna gives this intelligence, this faith to the demigods. Can we say that he gives also the faith so many other things?
Yes. It's an example, because here the demigods, because there's 33 million, so that's kind of like covers everything that a human being could be interested in. So if you give the example of the demigod worshippers, then you basically give the example for any materialist. Because here the demigod worshippers are ones that know how the material energy is functioning, you know, at least mechanically, and approach the demigods to get their results. So they're much more intelligent. They're doing it through Shastra. So they're pious, so they're going to get a better result. So their sense gratification is going to be way better than the person who doesn't know this. You know, so then as far as being a materialist, you could say they're doing a better job of it. So if you have that, then it includes, you know, the person standing on the corner and, you know, has other small little ideas of how they're going to please themselves, you know, in a much more temporary fashion. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it would be it covers all of that, because you have to have faith. You have to have faith that, you know, by going and climbing to the top of some mountain, you're going to be happy. Or if I go and ride, you know, this huge, you know, tsunami wave, that I'm going to be happy. And also some faith that I will probably survive, you know. So all these different things, you have to have faith. I'm going to jump out of the airplane, and by doing that and pulling, you know, I'm going to have fun. You know, you have to have faith in that. Or that I get on this bus, it says on there it's taking me to the city center, so it's going to take me to the center of the city. You know, it won't take me to, you know, out and to drop me off at Ayers Rock or something. You know, so it's... Timbuktu, maybe, okay. You know, you get on the bus, you know, for central London, and then it drops you off in Timbuktu. That might be a little bit disheartening, right? So you want to that faith that Krishna is giving, because that's what you want. You can't function without faith. When there's no faith, no one can function. So then because the living entity desires this, therefore Krishna appears in that form. He gives that faith, right? Then one goes on that way. But if one starts to wonder why this is not working, and actually sincerely inquires, then Krishna will put one in contact with the devotees, by which you'll get the faith in him as the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So we see that, you know, of course, through association of others, but basically Krishna is giving that intelligence, he's giving that faith to perform all these other activities. But when it comes to himself, then he does that through the devotees. Right? You're going to have faith, you want to deal in material energy, that he'll arrange. But you want to actually interact with him, then he puts you in contact with the devotees. Right? By the grace of the devotees, one knows Krishna. By the grace of Krishna, one gets the devotees. You know, that was that Upanishadic verse before. You know, by the grace of Shyam, then one knows his energy. By the grace of his energy, then one knows Shyam. You know, so that's right here. Shyamach, what? Chavalam prapadye, shavalach cha chamam prapadye. In surrendering to Shyam, Krishna, I take shelter of the essence of the pleasure potency. Taking shelter of the pleasure potency, I surrender to Krishna. So then he applies that there. He's got a lot of problems. That's the whole point. If you have problems dealing with devotees, you're not going to like spiritual life, because it's unfortunately it's a lot of devotees, right? Vaikuntha we know is packed with devotees, right? And that's Narayan. Then it says Krishna has a special quality that he's surrounded by unlimited devotees. So your problem is only going to increase. It's not going to get less. If one says, well, that's because all these people are conditioned, they don't behave right. But actually, it's more, we don't behave right. We don't have the perception. Because Yudhishthira Maharaj, he's saying that this forgiveness, that is very important for the living entity. Because by anger, if you do any action through anger, it'll always have a be wrong. Because anger is based on ignorance. So that has to be given up. Right? But that person who controls his anger, then he conquers, you know, the angry person. Right? Someone's done you wrong, that's out of anger. But you are controlling your anger, don't retaliate, then you're actually in control of them. Right? So the mistake is made by the ignorant people that anger is energy. He gets fired up, he's going to do something. But it's not. It means the controlling of the anger, then you can direct that energy. But the anger just manifests and go and do something. The ignorant think this is something very special. Right? But it's not. Emotional, yes, but not... Does that make sense? Yeah. In the Bhagavatam it is written, O Lord, only those who attain a particle of mercy for your lotus feet can understand your glory. Those who search for you by studying the scriptures using logic cannot understand you at all. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.29. So here, studying the scriptures using logic. You understand? In other words, you're studying the scriptures to know Krishna as service to Krishna, right? That's so it's part of padasevana, right? Studying the scripture. Then that will be because it's already with faith, right? It's already in the association of devotees. Knowledge coming from parampara. But if you're just using logic, and by logic you think you'll catch the Lord, then you'll never catch him. Like that. Realizations of Brahman and Paramatma are covered by Maya. Brahman realization has a covering of Maya by negation, and Paramatma realization has a covering of material energy directly. Right? When a person is able to see the Lord with uncovered spiritual eyes, he sees the spiritual form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This form is the highest truth, and his energies are his manifestations. If a person realizes the Lord devoid of energies, he has realization of Brahman. Some, according to their inclination, think that he is the final realization. Actually, realization of Bhagavan without energies, without qualities, is Brahman. Brahman with qualities and energies is Bhagavan. Thus, Bhagavan is the real truth. Brahman is only his impersonal effulgence, and Paramatma is the Lord's expansion who enters into the material universe. Though he appears to be Brahman through the impersonal quest, the Lord is eternally existing in an inconceivable form with qualities, separate from both matter and the living entities. Therefore, the Bhagavatam says, Varanti tat tattva viras tattvam yajjnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdite. Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11. Okay, let's see. Just going through this again. So we see here is that you, by negation, means you've removed everything that there is, you know, all the qualities and action, and then you've come to Brahman. So you've negated the material and come to Brahman. Therefore, it's covered by material. Right? In other words, the impersonal realization only works because you've used negation of the material to get to it. That means your Brahman realization is dependent upon your material negation. Does that make sense? Right? And Paramatma, then, he's saying here, has a covering of material energy directly, in that you just see him as the Lord of the material energy. He's just dealing with it here. So then is going to be, you don't see him as separate with all his qualities and his pastimes and all this. Right? It means the elements of eternal and all this that the impersonalists have, you apply that to Paramatma, but he has a form. He is eternal. He is the origin. He is, does that make sense? But still, that covering is there because he is just the lord of the material energy. He's entered into everything. He's in between everything. That means he's covered by material energy. Does that make sense? So only Bhagavan means the Lord with his qualities and energies is uncovered. That's full. Otherwise, the others, they're covered. Because you don't see the energies and qualities. Right? So even Bhagavan without the energies and qualities is still a Brahman understanding. Right? This is very important because you see a lot of people in India worship Satya Narayan. Right? It means, you know, the Satya means truth, Narayan. So they do Satya Narayan puja. But this is in the Panchopasana. Right? So Vishnu in the mode of goodness. Because it's the Lord, Bhagavan, but without his qualities and energies. Does that make sense? So it looks like the Lord, like that, but actually it's Brahman. That's why these people then will say ultimately Brahman's the ultimate. Right? So you wonder, well, how is it that they're worshipping Krishna in the temple and this and that, but they're basically the Brahmavadis? Because they don't actually see his qualities and pastimes and his energies. Does that make sense? Right? So it's subtle. In other words, what is the philosophy based on? The Bhagavan means it's the Lord with his qualities and energies performing his pastimes according to his free will. Right? So that's uncovered. But we know Paramatma because we know he is in every atom, between every atom. So what's that dependent upon? There being a material creation. Right? And the impersonal means you're removing the material creation, and then that's revealing the Brahman. But what's that based upon? Right? Still, your removal of the negative, you still haven't gotten to the positive. Well, Isha Upanishad saying, please remove your effulgence, means you as a person who has all your energies, and your energies are so, effulgent, that they're so bright I cannot see you. So please remove this glare so they can see you. But in other words, they're approaching Bhagavan, but they're trying to remove Brahman aspect from it. Right? Well, here, they're trying to remove the material energy so they can see Brahman. So it's different. Does this make sense? Right? Are we comfortable with all this hair splitting? Right? Because one may say, well, what does it matter? But if we think about it, this matters a lot, you know? Because then that means, why isn't someone in pure devotion? Because they want to get out of the material world. Therefore, they want to get to the spiritual world. So it's not so much the spiritual world is important, it's getting out of the material world is important. And it just happens to be the place to get out of here that you can go to is there. Like, you know, I want to get out of this room. And so that means I want to go next door. It's not that you want to go next door, you just want to get out of this room. So that won't be that dynamic devotion. That won't be pure unalloyed devotional service. Because pure unalloyed, I just want to get to the next room. I don't even notice this room. It doesn't even exist. So I'm just thinking of that room. So for you, there is no wall. So even if you're in this room, you're in that room. That's no covering. That's no obstacle. But while these others, they're dealing with the material covering, either removing it or seeing, you know, the Lord within that. But still the covering is there. But bhakti means you see the Lord without any of that covering. Therefore, he's in the material means he's descended into it. So you see him, and he descends into it, and now he may be here with us. The other one is they're clearing this away and then seeing him, but they're not seeing him in his original form in the spiritual world. So it's ascending. You understand the difference? Yes.
What is that? That would be then
aprakrita
experience?
Aprakrita. Aprakrita, yes, is that. But then how the devotee deals with him in the material world is through adhokshaja, how he descends into, through the understanding as Brahman. And then through the performance of my duties, I can connect that with the Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? And then the artha and kama, I connect that to my duties. Does that make sense? The Supreme Lord is there. He has entered into the material world. His potencies are everywhere. Right? That's adhokshaja. So aprakrita has come down to adhokshaja. Not that he changes, but we're able to perceive him here. I connect my duties, right, of the aparoksha to that. Right? Then my performance of my activities, my lifestyle, everything is connected to seeing the Lord everywhere and everything. But my ultimate point is to understand the Lord in his, you know, transcendental pastimes, his Bhagavan. Now, in that state, I connect my artha and kama to my, proper performance of duty. So in that way, they become connected, they become Krishnaized. Not that they can be Krishnaized on their own. Because Krishna won't descend lower than your prescribed duties. Right? Because that's what he says in Gita. Perform your prescribed duties. So whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer in charity, but these are all part of prescribed duties. Does that make sense? So as part of prescribed duties, then that's there. Does that make sense? Then he's connected. Does this make sense, how it's working, what the mechanics are? Otherwise, you make mistake and just think anything is the same. So performance of my duties or my sense gratification is the same. There's a different method. Performance of your duties includes the sense gratification, but the sense gratification doesn't necessarily include your duties. Does that make sense? So it's like I make an offering to Krishna and then I take the remnants. In other words, a human being subsists on sacrifice. So he offers whatever he has to the Lord and he accepts that remnants. Right? So in that, then the senses are taken care of. Right? But if he just takes something and then eats it, it's not that by engaging the senses that automatically is your duty. No, your duty is to subsist by sacrifice. So just engaging the senses directly, that's not duty. Right? So how do you connect Krishna into that? Does that make sense? That's why there's a difference between those who perform their religious duties, you know, and are situated properly in Dharma, and those who are in artha and kama, though they may be pious, but they haven't connected it to Dharma. Right? Even if they're following the Shastra, still, why are they following that Shastra? Because Dharma says you have to have a balance between Dharma, artha, and kama. Right? So then, that way, then the artha Shastra is connected back to Dharma, the kama Shastra is connected back to Dharma. Then it has meaning. Then it's elevating. Right? Otherwise, if you're on the platform of artha, you follow the artha Shastra, there'll be no sin, but you'll still be implicated. Does that make sense? Because you're only interested in economic development. Right? So there's a difference, so therefore that motive is important. Yudhishthira Maharaj also talks about this, or that Vaishnava Rishi talks about this to Yudhishthira, is that the attitude is very important besides the activity. Because the activity is important because it should be the right activity. Then the attitude behind it, that's even more important. So you may be having someone who's performing their religious activities, but their mentality is artha or kama. So that's not so good. But it's better than someone who is in artha for artha's sake or kama for kama's sake. At least they're following a higher principle to get at something lower. But still better they're following Dharma because that's what they're supposed to be doing. That's austerity. Does that make sense? So that austerity is going to get more result than austerity that the mentality is not right. Does that make sense? Dharma being done with the proper attitude, not for artha and kama, is going to give you better result than dharma for artha or for kama. Does that make sense? Like that. So the mentality is very, very important. So therefore, one is connecting one's art, means one's duties, one's prescribed duties, to Krishna, right? Through connecting them to, you know, it is his potencies that make it work. Krishna says, I am, you know, he is the how you say, the fire, he is the ghee, he is the mantra, he is the instruments that are used, he is the person offering it, he is the chant, he is the person who's sponsoring the yajna, he is the result. So this we see how his potencies are making everything work within the realm of sacrifice. But in here it's much easier to perceive because it's according to Shastra, according to Dharma. As you drop down, then if it's according to Shastra and Artha Kama, it's still, that's good, it's connected. But unless it's done as sacrifice, then the quality that you're dealing with, it won't be very great. Does that make sense? So you'll be getting very minimal from it. So the idea is devotee connects it, then he's getting the maximum from that, that is able to be engaged in Krishna's service. Does this make some sense? The fine points, but that's sort of the idea of this class, is to be able to appreciate fine points. Right? Because Bhagavatam is the finest of points. Right? It's written by Vyasadeva in his maturity. You know, so what we're talking now is, you know, these technical points like Vedanta Sutra stuff, Upanishadic stuff. Right? So this is written in his maturity. So there's so much more. It has this technicality in it. Second canto Bhagavatam is like this. You know, like this. But you have the element of the relationship with the Lord. Bhagavan is much more prominent. Right? So if we can distinguish these technicalities, then we can keep ourselves very nicely situated on being able to distinguish, you know, what is to be done and what is not to be done. Does that make sense? Yes.
What about it's like my personal, like I was thinking. For example, if
your personal, you were thinking.
Yeah. For example, I have enough, like I have as much as I need.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, I thought I wouldn't have problem to see it connected because whatever I need, then I take whatever, you know, mm-hmm. I give. But if I, for example, if I would have a, instead of apartment in Mayapur, I would have like a villa with a pool in Hawaii, that would create some doubt. You know, how can I connect that? Is it just mentality?
Do you have a villa in Hawaii with a pool?
No,
why Hawaii? Why not the Bahamas? Or why not in Monte Carlo? Or the Riviera?
But for example, I would have a choice to have, you know, like, I would,
do you have a choice? Do you have an apartment in Mayapur?
No.
Okay. So, why go beyond something you don't have? Why the villa with the pool? What if you bought, you know, the whole city? Or what if you have your own airplane? Or, you know, what if you had your own airline? Or, you know, you could go, you know what I'm saying? So why that? You know, that's what I'm saying. That seems to be a particular line of thought that might be interesting.
Desire,
something like that. You want to put a pool in your apartment once you get it. You buy two apartments and just turn one of them into a pool, right? Well, that would be interesting.
You can have a Pacific Ocean as that pool.
Yes, Pacific Ocean is there as a pool. Okay. The point is that's going to be there because you're going to engage the elements of whatever's there connected to the Lord. The point is, if you see the villa and the pool as sense gratification, and that's all, then yes, then it's a problem. But if you see it as a place where you can live your life and engage your life in Krishna's service, then what's the problem?
Yeah, when I go to fitness, like, there's a fitness, right? My personal and sauna.
A fitness. Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay, so you go to a sauna.
Krishna doesn't need that, right?
Krishna doesn't need it. No, he doesn't, but he doesn't have a material body. Right? His body is always in good health. So he doesn't have to sit, you know, in, you know, a hot steam bath to make his bones not hurt. So it depends why you're at the sauna, why you're at the spa. Is it to improve the health so you can properly engage in Krishna's service, or is it just for sense gratification? It's a mentality. Why that? Why not eating? Why do you eat? You don't know. Do you know what eating is?
I have to.
You have to. Okay. So every time, every
because
bite you take is like a complete burden and disturbance because it's something you're being forced to do. You're laughing, but... Breathing. What about breathing? The Bhagavatam mentions breathing. You breathe, but if it's not connected to Krishna, then it's like the breathing in the bellows. You know, they also, air goes in and out. So why does it have to be a villa with a pool in Hawaii? Right? The villa with a pool is nice, but if it's not on the ocean, why be in Hawaii if you're not next to the beach, you know, so you can go swim in the ocean?
Sometimes there are high waves.
High waves, like that. But since you're buying a villa anyway, you can decide which side of the island and which island you're buying it anyway. So you can always get it with one of those ones with the coral reef that you have the nice turquoise, you know, place and like that. And if you don't like it there, get it in Mauritius or in the Seychelles. You know what I'm saying? You have enough money to do all that. So then, you know, you have your options. You know what I'm saying? So the point is this, why are you breathing? No answer. You didn't know you were breathing.
I'm breathing. It's automatic.
It's automatic. Okay, so you're happy with that.
But I would not be happy if I would not be able to.
That's there, but why do you need to breathe?
Otherwise the body would not function.
Okay, therefore if the body functions, then what's the advantage of the body functioning?
I can chant Hare Krishna.
Okay, so now if your health is good, then you can chant Hare Krishna, you know? So therefore you breathe, you eat, you know, you do exercise, or whatever it is you need to do to keep in shape that you can do your service. You know what I'm saying? Okay. We'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Shri Prabhupada ki.
Jaya.